You're telling on yourself, bud. Hour number three kicks off in the Fan Run Studios, Fox Sports, Knoxville. We start the hour with, I love it, coaching hot seats in NCAA football. Hickman, if you had to guess, which coach has the hottest seat in all of college football?
I feel like Brian Harsin's going to be number one.
He's close. He's not number one.
Okay, Mike Norvell.
No.
Scott Frost.
Yes, Scott Frost. Okay. Scott Frost. The write-up on him is lengthy. Obviously, things have not gone to plan for Scott Frost at Nebraska. Terrible special teams. Turnover machine. Did anyone see this coming? As good as he was at UCF, did we think he'd go to Nebraska and just absolutely stink out loud?
They'd have been better off keeping Bo Pelini.
It's not even close, man. Bo Pelini won 8, 9, 10 games like every year.
Scott Frost, has he cracked 6 yet?
Oh, what is his best record? Maybe not, man. He may not have.
And like they were like Pelini. They were like he wins 8 games, ranked in the top 25 all year. They were still mad.
Scott, oh yeah, they were ready to run him. And Scott Frost, I mean, it makes sense, right? Scott,
I mean,
Frost,
it'd
be like if Peyton came back to coach the Vols. Like, no one's ever going to have a longer leash as head coach than the quarterback who won. I'm not crazy, right? He did win a Heisman and a national championship at Nebraska. I mean, the guy, he's a legend at Nebraska.
He is, yeah.
So it's worse than I thought it was.
He's been there 3 years now, right?
4.
This is his fourth, or this is
going to be his fifth.
Okay.
So, his first year, 4-8.
Do you have what they were the year before he got there?
Let me look it up, yeah.
No, I'll look it up while you're reading that.
I'll look it up.
I don't want you to get off that tab, because then you have to go back to that tab.
No, I won't.
I didn't remember.
You know how good this one website is? So, I totally forgot about Mike Riley. Oh, gosh. So, Mike Riley, I forgot about him. He was just kind of sandwiched in between Bo Pelini and Scott Frost.
Right.
Mike Riley went 6-7, 9-4, and 4-8. Year one of Scott Frost, they went 4-8. Year two, they were preseason 24 in the country, 5-7. Followed that up with a 3-5 season.
COVID year.
And then last year, 3-9.
They were 3-9 last year?
Yeah. And I think every game they lost was 10 points or less, maybe.
I do remember they were in a lot of close games. Did anyone see that coming? Did you have any inkling whatsoever that he wouldn't get them to a bowl game in his first 4 seasons?
No.
I mean, I realize Nebraska's a tough job. I like the first year or two, sure, but that is remarkably bad for a guy who I think we all agree when he was at UCF was what. I mean, did we not have him on the hot board a couple times here? Was he not on our hot board before the Schiano debacle? Did we not want him until Nebraska made a move? And then I think Florida wanted him. We wanted him.
Then you look at Bo Pelini, a guy who they were just acted like it was just the worst thing in the world. His first year, he went 9-4. And that's after he inherited a 5-7 team. He had back-to-back years going 10-4, back to 9-4, 10-4, 9-4, 9-3 before getting fired before their bowl game.
He was 9-3 and got fired before the bowl game.
Yeah.
So they were hoping for like a Mark Richt scenario where they hire a 10-3 coach, bring in somebody else, and they just hit the ground running, maybe take a little bit of a step back, and then bolt to, you know, 10, 11, 12 wins.
No.
Didn't happen. Scott Frost, hottest seat in all of college football. Hickman, Brian Harsin comes in at 2.
I don't agree with that.
He went 6-7 last year. And then, obviously, the failed coup to, again, I don't know if the rumors about he and his assistant were true or false, but nothing was proven. He gets to keep his job. It feels like he probably has to go 8-4 or better to keep his job this year. I guess maybe with a 7-5 and a bowl win, if you go 8-5, he could keep it. It just seems very unlikely, especially with his defiance towards the boosters at SEC Media Days and in the media in general since he was retained. Seems very unlikely that he's going to have a lot of good graces in Auburn should things not go above expectations for him.
So Frost 1, Harsin 2. Who's 3?
You'll never get it.
Give me a hint. What conference?
Pac-12.
Let's see.
I don't know what article you're looking at, but I mean, I saw a name from that conference.
Who is it?
Herm Edwards.
It is Herm Edwards at three.
Is someone still at Arizona?
I believe so. Yeah.
That was wasn't it my someone? Guess.
He's not there anymore, right?
I thought he was still at Arizona. Is he not?
I don't know. I mean, I know he was after A&M, right?
Mm-hmm. Herm Edwards at Arizona State comes in at three. Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech at four. That one's kind of boring. In the ACC, this is surprising. I thought he was a really good coach. I think Syracuse is one of those jobs that's just going to be really tough to win. Dino Babers is on the hot seat in the ACC. They also have, worth mentioning, Scott Satterfield at Louisville and Mike Norvell at Florida State, who you mentioned, Hickman. Here's what they have to say about Florida State and Mike Norvell. Contractual actions indicate significant support for Mike Norvell. As Florida State added a year to his deal after last season, it would cost $18.8 million to fire him after the regular season, as FSU has added another year at $7 million, 85% of which is guaranteed, after Florida State went 5-7 last year. If the Seminoles are hoping or planning to fire him, that would be a baffling administrative decision to make it so much more expensive. It's also important to remember that Florida State's finances are underwhelming, and Willie Taggart is reportedly still receiving just under $300,000 per month from his $14 million buyout both this year and next year. So they're still paying out a bunch to Willie Taggart. They gave Mike Norvell an extra year, which I didn't understand at the time. I still don't quite understand. We'll go on to the other conferences here in a second, but also worth mentioning, according to Pete Thamel in the ACC, is Mac Brown. Now, that was a disappointing season last year, but it's also North Carolina football. Thamel mentions that Mac Brown does turn 71 later this month. A 6-7 season last year, very disappointing. I think they were preseason top. Were they preseason top 10?
Yeah.
And they lost the opener to Virginia Tech. I watched that game. That was actually a really good game to watch if you just enjoyed college football. Apparently, there's plenty of hope at North Carolina that some new hires over the offseason will unlock the potential. They also added Gene Chizik at defensive coordinator. It's also hard to imagine a huge leap considering how valuable departed quarterback Sam Howell was to the program. It's unlikely this season, but tracking Brown over the next few years remains worthwhile. I mean, 71, but weren't they just absolutely terrible before he got there?
I mean, I don't know. I mean,
who did they have? The dark-headed guy that's kind of fallen off the planet.
They didn't have the guy from West Virginia, did they?
I'll look that up here in a minute. Go to the phone lines now. DR Vol is patiently waiting. DR, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. You don't have to go back into it. I'm going to go back and listen to the podcast. But what was the final record that Roman Harper and Peter Burns gave for us?
10-2 losses to LSU and Alabama.
I'd take that right now.
And run, buddy. I'd run.
Yeah. I think I'd roll the dice for 11-1.
Yeah, I bet you would, Adam. You know, I'm going to go a little DR downer here with the apathetic Adam you may enjoy this. What do y'all think of the stat with Heupel that every year he's got progressively worse as a head coach, like the record-wise? Or, you know, he's only been a head coach for us in Central Florida, but every year at Central Florida, the record got worse. I know he was undefeated that first year, so it's kind of an outlier.
Well, if he goes worse this year, then he might be on this hot seat list next year.
If he goes worse last year, he is on my hot seat.
Officially? You're moving him on to the hot seat?
I'm not going to say fire him, but we lose to Florida and Pittsburgh again this year. I'm going to have a lot of doubts in that guy, especially Florida. I've said that over and over. You have to freaking beat them this year.
You got to take a step forward. You can't go 7-6 again, 7-5 again. You have to win. You have to get 8 wins in the regular season. Like, you absolutely have to. Because your schedule gets harder next year.
I know, and then I agree. Like, 7-5 is not going to do it for me. Honestly, this is insane considering what we've been through over the years. 8-4 may be a little disappointing. through to me. I'd be happy with it, but I would want more.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, like last year at the end of the year, you wanted more. And there's always year one is always very, very strange because usually the guy before the new coach has been so bad that any improvement feels really good. But you probably didn't know how good or bad the roster was under Pruitt because he was such a moron. 8-4, yeah, maybe a little disappointing, especially if the losses are to like Pitt again, Florida, Georgia and Alabama. It's a little disappointing, but at least it's progress. It's a step in the right direction. And then what are you doing to teams like Kentucky, Missouri, South Carolina? Are you distancing yourself even more from them? You know, teams that you beat last year. Are you in a dogfight with Missouri? What if you beat Pitt and lose to Kentucky? Like, beating Pitt's probably the better win, but if you lose to Kentucky, that probably hurts the fan base more. I mean, it's tough to project, but I think 8-4, you know, unless you just get absolutely embarrassed in the four, it is a step in the right direction. Probably still feels a little disappointing, but still positive progress.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot of it is, like you just said, Houston, who those four losses, you know, like Butch's, not his last year, 2016. You know, that's a hard way. It's kind of weird looking at that schedule. You beat Florida, Georgia, but you freaking lost to
South Carolina and Vandy. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's, I don't know. A lot of it's how you get there, I guess. But I just want to get y'all's thoughts on that, and I will hang up and listen. You have a good day, guys.
Yeah, the way that season went in 16, the loss to A&M, I don't think that really burned people up too bad. Tough road game, and we turned it over, what, six times?
Yeah, and it's like, all right, you know, you got Bama ahead, but after that you should win out. You should go 10-2.
You also got really banged up against Georgia and A&M, so it felt like you were running out of skeleton crew against Alabama. But I think that's when, I know for me, and I'll speak for Nate, when you lost to South Carolina, and then obviously Vanderbilt, but really it was the South Carolina game. I'm pretty sure that was off of a bye week. That's when you knew that coaching staff, and specifically Butch Jones, just wasn't going to get it done. You had no business losing to that Will Muschamp team. And then the South Carolina game, it felt almost like the team had given up at that point. Now, you did somewhat salvage that with a win over Nebraska in the Music City Bowl, but I mean, we've been talking today about how bad Nebraska's been. That's not exactly the most talented roster. And I wonder if Derek Barnett's not chasing a sack record in that game, does anyone even care that it happened? It was a good name game, you know, Tennessee versus Nebraska, for those of us who grew up in the 90s and remember how good Nebraska was and how good Tennessee was. But the reality was, like, that was a very, very disappointing season. That was a playoff-caliber team that suffered injuries. A lot of those were Butch Jones' fault for not hiring a strength and conditioning coordinator with a resume and just promoting the assistant. So you had a lot of guys get banged up. And then just game management issues, typical stuff. And I'm trying to remember. Tennessee, I believe, going into the Georgia game that year, had fumbled the ball 10 times and lost two. So you had fumbled 10 times in the first four games of the season and only lost two. I think they had forced eight and recovered six. And then that A&M game, I want to say you lost four or five fumbles. And then obviously the interception in overtime to seal the deal. It was an undisciplined team. It was a team that had all the talent in the world. I mean, I remember when Jalen Hurd was announced out for Texas A&M, and everyone's like, uh-oh. And then Kamara and John Kelly go crazy, but they couldn't hold on to the football. So and you were still able to fight back and claw in that game and, you know, force overtime. But if you go back, Tennessee scores, ties the game with a minute and a half left, but they get a penalty on the extra point. You were averaging 7 yards a carry. You had Kamara, John Kelly, Josh Dobbs, Juwan Jennings, Josh Malone. You got 1 yard to go to take the lead. They ended up missing the field goal to win the game. If you have the lead right there, you probably win that game and don't have to go to overtime. But Butch Jones, because of his own mental weakness, realized that if I go for two and don't get it, the fans will hate me more than if I kick the extra point and we lose in overtime. He had a loser mentality. And then he lost to South Carolina and Vanderbilt with a top 10 talented team. That's why the fans turned on Butch Jones. Not all of them, but the writing was on the wall after 2016.
Absolutely.
It is year two for Heupel. So I don't think there's any way this team goes 6-6 or worse without catastrophic injuries. And at that point, there's, I don't want to say grace given, but there's an understanding of, okay, we lost our quarterback, our best receiver, two offensive linemen, our best linebacker, two of our corner. If that were to happen, I think the fan, I mean, I know Tennessee fans get a bad rap, but Tennessee fans understand football and they understand personnel. This team is much deeper than it was last year, but if injuries are what caused this team to have a record worse than what most fans want, there is at least an understanding of bad luck, and I don't think anybody's going to be ready to run Josh Heupel. Now, if you're losing games with all this talent because of bad coaching decisions, playing the wrong guy like Butch Jones did, stupid stuff like you keep shooting yourself in the foot with penalties or you're a turnover machine, that's when things get a little different.
I still stand by it that we will know if he's the guy after this year, or is he just another come in, do your thing for 4 or 5 years, get blown out of here? You'll know after this year if you got a real coach.
The only way I think you don't is if the injuries are just too much to overcome.
Yeah, like if Hooker and right. Cedric Tillman go down.
Yeah, yeah. But if they stay relatively healthy, well, and that's also a two-sided coin that if those guys were, let's say you did have some catastrophic injuries and you're still able to go 8-4.
Oh, yeah, that's
right, or even if it's the injuries happen early, but you go 7-5, but you have an upset win here and there, and you look impressive.
Feel like you went 10-2.
Right? Yeah. I mean, we've seen that happen with teams. Was it the?
Because you're winning with players that are on next year's.
Yeah,
team.
Exactly. It's not the season you wanted, but you can kind of see the progress for next year because you would see young guys probably come in and step up. But that's happened a lot. I want to say there was a bowl game with Baylor and maybe North Carolina a few years ago. Baylor was down to their fifth-string quarterback, and I think they started a receiver at quarterback. They ended up winning the game. And, yeah, it's a meaningless bowl game, but if you're a Baylor fan, you're saying, wow, this coach, I think it was Matt Rhule, found a way to win with a completely new game plan. I mean, that's what good coaches do. They adapt, they adjust, and they overcome, you know, a certain amount of injuries. I think some of them are much harder to overcome than others. We'll hit a quick break, come back, continue the conversation on the other side. It's 3 and Out, Fan Run Radio. Hour 3 continues, the Fan Run Studios, Fox Sports, Knoxville. This is 3 and Out, your Thursday morning edition. Get well, Godfather. Get well.
I was really looking forward to seeing Nate today.
He didn't have to see you for a week.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Hickman suddenly might be able to come in tomorrow now that the boss is a little under the weather. It's funny how that works out.
Depends on how much pool stuff I got to get done before I leave.
Got a hole to dig tomorrow? Ground should be nice and soft after all this rain we've had.
I don't think we got a hole to dig tomorrow.
May not have to put water in the pools.
Yeah, you just sit back and wait.
It's nasty water.
Rain water? Why do you say that? Smoky Mountain rain? It's not nasty.
Smoky Mountain rain. Yeah, I was really looking forward to seeing Nate today. You clowns have been driving me crazy all week.
Take it back. You know that's not true.
I will do no such thing.
Why are you so hateful?
I feel like I've done great this week, not to pat myself on the back. But
yeah, you never do that. Anything else? Is that it? You just wanted to say that?
I just wanted
to pat myself on the back, but let me just end it right there after I pat myself on the back.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to the Big 12. The only coach worth monitoring in the Big 12 as far as the hot seat is concerned is West Virginia's Neil Brown. He is 17-18, two losing seasons in 3 years. However, his buyout is $16.7 million. It is West Virginia. I don't know that we care that much, although we do play them in 2 years.
Yeah, and they also play Pitt start of the year.
So we're rooting for Neil Brown. Well, I don't know. Some people are. At least for Neil Brown to make it a four-quarter game and make sure Pitt starters have to stay out there and sweat it out on a Thursday night.
I mean, if they win, you're not going to hate it, are you? But more expectations going into that one for us to win.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Like, if Pitt wins and we lose to Pitt, it's like, okay, maybe they're pretty good. If Pitt wins and we beat them, it's a better win. But if Pitt loses to West Virginia, it might mean they stink and we get an easy win on the road.
Yeah, you can look at it.
I'm all about wins. I love the hype of, oh, you beat a top. At that point, they'd be a top 15 team on the road. Like, that would be great. I just want to win the game. I don't care what they're ranked. I just want to win the game and move on to Akron and then ultimately Florida, which is going to be the one that everyone cares about. Pac-12 does not have a coach on the hot seat.
Can I go back to Big 12 just real quick?
Yeah, if you want
to. Or a future SEC team. So Sark's nowhere on this list yet?
No.
He's not on the hot seat. Would you consider him hot seat, possibly? I mean, what's his third year, right?
I mean, they did get a first-place vote.
Didn't they lose 7 in a row?
7 in a row.
I mean,
they got Isaiah Nayor. They've got Quinn Ewers, who I think is going to be the starter.
Surely to do.
But no, because I think because he got Arch, and I don't think
they're going to give him another. Till they get to Arch.
I think they'll absolutely give him another year.
We don't know if Arch is going to. I mean, is he going to be better than Quinn Ewers?
Oh, I don't know, but they're not. Texas won't want to risk not getting Arch Manning.
That's true.
So I think honestly, unless he throws up an offer. They'll probably think, well, let him get his guys in here. He's got Arch. He's got a great recruiting class coming in. I say it all the time. You can lose games as long as your recruiting class is top 10. People will say, wow, you got a top – yeah, top 10.
They don't care what their record would be?
I mean, I think they care, but I think the recruiting class coming in buys you just more time and lenience with the fan base.
Even if they suck this year, he could go winless this year, and I think he's got 2 years left. Whew.
Like I said, I don't think if he goes winless, he's coming back. But I think the fact that the recruiting class, I mean, they just got the top running back. They got Arch Manning.
That's his guy.
Winless, I think he might get fired. But I also think Texas boosters would say it would be really embarrassing if we fired our coach, lost Arch Manning, and then we're hiring who?
That would be it for them as a program.
I wouldn't say that. They got enough money to figure it out. But no, I'm not going to say. I'm not going to say that would be it.
You worried Nico isn't going to quite live up to the hype, and then we have a lot of boosters who aren't so willing to give money next time for the next quarterback that comes along?
Like, what do you mean? Like year one?
Not year one, just in general.
I mean, recruiting, it's, yes, the law of averages says if you get a bunch of five-star guys, a lot of them are going to pan out, but quarterback's tough, man. Yeah. Go back and look at some years, and guys 1 through 10 don't really do anything, but then there's a stretch run in the 18 to 24 range where it's like five of those guys are in the NFL. It happens every year. Some guys just develop late. I'm hopeful that's Nico because he's already, you know, a top two or three quarterback in the country, and he's only been playing for, you know, 2 or 3 years. But if he just gets here and never sees the field, yeah, I think some boosters would say, But that's recruiting. Like, you're going to miss out on five stars.
Yeah,
and especially at Tennessee. Like, I'm not saying we're cursed, but we have a pretty bad history of can't miss prospects that don't pan out. What are you grinning about?
Who, me?
Yeah. What's so funny? You asked a good question. I'm talking about Nico, and you're over there just gee. What is it?
Somebody just texted me that there's no way if Sark goes winless that they keep him. But
I would agree.
I don't know. The Manning name is a powerful name to have in your back pocket. So,
I think winless, he's gone.
Yeah.
And they say, who cares if it's Arch Manning? This guy can't win a game with Quinn Ewers, who was Arch Manning 3 years ago. But the name Manning does matter. I've also read reports that Manning would be a three-star if his last name was Smith. So
I totally agree. Have you seen the competition he plays?
Yes, it's underwhelming, to say the least.
Very underwhelming.
Very underwhelming.
He doesn't do camps. Yeah, I wouldn't want the kid.
I've almost seen more basketball than I have.
If you take away 7-on-7, I've seen more volleyball highlights of Nico than I have football. Nico's going to be an interesting one to monitor this year because he was going to go to Poly or South Poly, but now he's going to go back to, I think it's Warren High School. It's like that's kind of a weird situation there.
He's going to have a big year.
Let's hope so. I mean, his 7-on-7 team is legit, but I don't know how many of those guys are on the Warren team. I think a couple of them play for Pauly, so he would have joined them, and now he's not. Obviously, he's been good. The good thing about him is he does go to 7-on-7s. He does camp a little bit, although he did skip the Elite 11 camp for a volleyball tournament. But, hey, I'm fine with that. That's what the kid wants to do.
He's a national champ in that.
His volleyball highlights are pretty
impressive. They're pretty sick. They're pretty sick. I'm not like a big volleyball fan, but that guy can sky.
Yes.
Like, when it comes to spikes, he's absolutely legit.
Yeah.
The Pac-12 says they had a lot of their turnover last year. Worth monitoring in the Pac-12. Can either of you name me Colorado's coach?
No.
I don't think I've ever seen this name before. He's been there 3 years.
No.
Carl Dorrell?
No, never heard
never.
Of it.
You're listening to... Two short segments left on this Thursday edition of Three and Out right here, Fan Run Radio. Houston Kress, Adam Hickman, intern Brett with you. Matt Hayes put out 25 burning questions for college football in 2022. With these two short segments left, we will cook through these pretty quickly.
Let's
do it. I want to hit Nate with some of these when he gets back because I think some of these are interesting. We don't have to spend a lot of time on each question, but there are a few of them. I'll skip the ones that kind of stink. Number one question, can Georgia repeat?
No.
Yeah, I'm a big no on that. I'm a big no on that one. Yeah, could they lose too much? Could they make the playoff potentially?
Probably.
If they were to go undefeated regular season and lose the SEC championship, much like they did last year, possible. Hickman, you mentioned their schedule earlier. Pretty easy.
It's a cakewalk.
Seems like they're probably a lock to win the East.
We might be their toughest game. We are their toughest game, probably.
I think we are.
Kentucky,
I think
you're probably maybe, right. Depending on
Oregon,
how they are.
Yeah, I don't know. Is Oregon even ranked in the preseason? I have no idea.
I mean,
I know we're just outside the top 25. They might be. We'll learn a lot about Oregon week one against Georgia. Number two, will the SEC make it four national championships in a row?
I mean,
odds are yes. Ohio State's the best threat to the conference, I believe.
The top five non-SEC teams with odds to win a national championship, again, not in the SEC, Ohio State, Clemson. I'm wondering if Clemson might have a little bit of a bounce back year this year. We'll see. They still won 10 games last year. Southern Cal, which if you read anything from Los Angeles, it's that, yes, their top-end talent is good. You're hearing a lot from Southern Cal of what you're hearing from Florida. You know, the starting 22, not that bad, a couple of really good players, but depth is an issue thanks to lack of recruiting success for both of those programs. Next up is Oklahoma. Brent Venables, Jeff Lebby,
no,
I don't understand
Dylan Gabriel.
It.
I mean, it is the Big 12. They're probably going to win a lot of games. And Notre Dame.
No.
Big first year for Marcus Freeman, who also opens against Ohio State.
It's like you're going to open behind the eight ball.
Yeah, it certainly seems like that. I mean, they may play a really good game and lose by 14 to 21 points. It's very possible when they go to the horseshoe. Will another new team crash the playoff field? The top five candidates for teams who have not made a playoff yet but have odds. Baylor?
I can see it.
Texas A&M? Mm-hmm. If Haynes King is, you know, if he lives up to the hype, they might have a chance.
Yeah, Jimbo will Jimbo at some point this year.
Utah? Southern Cal again? And Miami? Could you see one of those five making the playoff?
I think we're putting too much stock in Mario Cristobal.
Okay.
So I don't see Miami. I don't see USC year one. Most likely for me out of that group of teams, probably Utah.
Yeah, I'd say Utah.
I'd have to look at their schedule. Obviously, opening at Florida on paper looks good. They play in a pretty weak conference. It's weird that USC would be getting better odds than Utah when Utah won the Pac-12 last year. Obviously, Lincoln Riley did a good job getting some additions. I'm just not sold on USC being that good that fast. Number seven is, will Lincoln Riley's impact be felt immediately at USC? The answer is obviously yes, but what does that mean?
Like, I mean, yes, because they're going to go from crap to being probably a pretty good team.
I think they're going to be a pretty good offense. I think they're probably going to lose some shootouts, and their depth will be a big factor.
USC is at Utah as well.
Yeah.
October 15th.
Well, number nine is, can Utah change its road woes and reach a playoff? So Utah apparently under Whittingham not been a very good road team. They get a big chance in week one.
Yeah, they go to
Oregon.
At Oregon, yeah.
Last
game of the season almost, second to last.
I don't know enough about Oregon. I mean, it's, you know, Dan Lanning. I don't know who their offensive coordinator is. It's going to be a very different look for Oregon. It might benefit them. The Pac-12 does not play great defense, and if they can up their defense and be halfway decent on offense, they might have a chance to win some games. I did not expect Utah to come in eighth in the preseason coaches poll, but a lot of people high on Utah. We'll hit our final break of the program, come back, wrap up these burning questions for college football next. Final segment as we dive back into the burning questions for college football. Number 15 on the list. We skipped a couple that are fairly boring and dumb. Number 14 was who has the toughest road to the playoff. They chose Texas A&M. I don't necessarily disagree, drawing obviously all the West teams, Florida, and a South Carolina team that some think could be a little bit of a sleeper in the East. I don't think a challenge to win it, but could cause some confusion at the top of the ranks. Number 15, can anyone challenge Georgia in the East?
Yes.
Attaboy, Hickman. I figured
yes. The Tennessee Volunteers
might
can.
Say that.
Yes.
The write-up here says it's not as easy as you'd think. According to Matt Hayes, he mentions Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Georgia, not as a team that can challenge for the East, but that could make the East race very interesting. He expects Florida to be a very different team by Halloween than they are to start the season as they find themselves during the season under Billy Napier. He also says the world's largest cocktail party, always a different animal, and if Florida has improved enough by then, could be a game in which they give Georgia some trouble. He does mention Tennessee as a team that could force Georgia into a Big 12-style shootout with an offense that could be among the nation's best.
If it's a shootout, we win.
If you think so? I'd feel better about that than us just obviously getting throat stomps.
Higher odds.
Yeah.
I feel like I trust our offense more than I would trust Georgia's. Don't get me wrong, they're fully capable, especially with all those tight ends, and they're always able to run the football. On the road, though, that's gonna be tough. But a shootout on the road is always fun, especially if it's a game you're not really expected to win.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see what the line is week of that game. I don't care what it is now. What is it by the time that week rolls around? Number 18, is Texas back?
No.
They say the offense will be better than it has been in a long time, but defensively,
I mean, they let Kansas score, like, what, 55 on them last year?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good
right.
Lord.
Number 20, one that interests Tennessee fans. Will the transition at LSU under Brian Kelly be ugly or seamless?
I'm going to say there'll be some early bumps.
Somewhere in between all ugly and seamless.
That's what
like.
He says, a combination. He says at times it won't be pretty, but when Kelly finally does choose a quarterback for good at some point during the season, everything will fall into place. Until then, there could be a few rough spots. Let's just hope that's after
we play them.
Week 6.
Yes.
We get the bye week in week 5. Maybe Tennessee going down there and beating LSU will be the reminder to Brian Kelly that he needs to settle on one quarterback and one quarterback only. Let's see. A bunch of talk about Alabama players poised for a breakout season. All right, here we go. Who is the most overlooked player in college football?
Hendon bleeping Hooker.
He mentions him. Says plenty of good answers. Hendon Hooker, Virginia quarterback Brennan Armstrong, but apparently, Hickman, none come close to Army outside linebacker Andre Carter, 6'7", 260 pounds. He had 15 and a half sacks last season.
Okay, well, I mean, he plays for Army, though, so of course nobody talks about him.
15 and a half sacks, 6'7", 270 outside linebacker? Are you kidding me?
That's a big boy.
We'll do our playoff predictions down the road, I'm sure. He has Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Baylor.
Can I pick first for that, by the way?
We'll probably do a random draw. We'll do it again tomorrow, hopefully. You're listening.